We're in the home stretch here on Scrambled Eggs. Welcome in, everyone, to your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you on Crack Sidewalks. And Phil, we're going to talk about the last couple games, which has caused a lot of groans in Marquette Nation.
It's been a rough week for only having lost one game.
Right. A disappointing 1-1 stretch for sure. In the previous week, we're going to talk about both of those games, and we'll talk about the tournament because people are still talking about it, and probably for good reason, actually. We'll just go through that, and then we'll look ahead to the last four games and maybe what Marquette might have to do to remain relevant as we get into March. March is very, very close.
Oh, not close enough from a weather perspective, but that's neither here nor there. I keep complaining about that. One of these days, I will stop.
Yeah, I think on Groundhog Day, I think six more weeks of winter sounded like a great deal to a lot of us, didn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And speaking of Groundhog Day, RIP Harold Ramis.
Yeah, very sad. Egon has left us.
Man, makes me sad. But that's not we're not going to hear.
We're starting the podcast on a real downer now.
Yeah, we're not here to debate greatest Harold Ramis movies.
I mean, that guy was a genius, and you know we're not.
Right. we're whatever the opposite of that is.
We're the polar opposite of that. But let's get started. Speaking of polar opposites, how about Creighton and Marquette, a team that is charging hard towards the Big 12, the NCAA tournament, and then Marquette, which is, well, just kind of waiting there. And that was a game, you know, heading into it, Phil, we were talking, you know, this is a game Marquette needed to win. And it seems like, you know, every time Marquette said, well, we need this one. Oh, well, we lost. Well, we need the next one.
Yeah. Don't worry. We got another one coming up. We can win that one.
But the Creighton loss was so deflating, really, because Marquette, you know, for the most part, played well, I thought. Well is maybe overstated, but Marquette played all right for 30 minutes in that game. I mean, it wasn't too bad. I mean, they were within five with less than eight to play, and then Creighton just opened up a big old can of whoop-ass and just wiped Marquette off the floor.
Well, they were scrappy the whole game, and it was one of those games where you kind of, the entire first half, you're going, you were on pins and needles because you were going, okay, this is when Creighton puts the big run together and Marquette goes quietly into the night and we all get out of here early and get some rest. It's a work day tomorrow. But then by halftime, they were within, I want to say it was three or four, something like that. And then they just hung with them for the first 12 minutes. You know, Creighton would go on a run. Marquette would punch back, get within four, five, 6 points. And then Creighton would go on a run and back and forth. And eventually, Marquette just ran out of punches. And that was kind of the worst kind of loss for me, is because I went in on the podcast, I was optimistic. Going into the game, I was somewhat optimistic, but still going, there's a good chance we're going to lose this game. But then when they kept staying in it, it just, oh, hey, I've got some hope. Hey, maybe there's a shot. And then it's like the last haymaker you never saw coming. I went down like Glass Joe from Nintendo's Knockout.
Right. And the thing is, they got as close as five in a second. They were down seven at halftime, actually.
Okay.
And they got as close as five. And that's when Doug McDermott just really kind of cranked it up a notch. You see, the guy might be the National Player of the Year, to be honest. He's definitely the Big East Player of the Year.
Right. And he's also the Flopper of the Year.
Well, there's that, too. But he just made so many big shots, and you got to give him credit for that. I mean, he stepped up when his team needed him to, hit just soul-crushing jump shots that you just wondered, like, when are these guys going to miss one? Because they shot 62% in the game.
Well, and yeah, he had big shots, including that fadeaway 25-footer with 2 seconds left on the shot clock that just daggered us. But, you know, so he was hitting, and that was definitely unpleasant. But on top of that, that kind of 2-3 minute segment was the season in a microcosm, I felt like, because there was two plays in a row. I think we got a rebound, got a stop, down five. And Todd came down on a delayed break and took a, you know, in transition 3-point shot, which I thought was completely unnecessary and of course missed it. And Creighton came down immediately after that, got a bucket. And then we went down and I think we had a,
That was, I'm looking at the play by play here. The segment you're talking about was early in the second half. Marquette was down five. It was 46-41 when Todd took that three, missed, rebound the other way, McDermott three, and then you're down eight again.
Right, and then I think there was another point where Todd had a breakaway where he went for the layup after we got a stop, down five, and got stripped, ball to Creighton, and then McDermott came down and hit another three. It was either McDermott or Rangy, And that just kind of both those
Yep.
plays were so deflating, and you just went, oh boy, it's just not going to happen today.
Yeah, Mayo didn't have his best game, to say the least, in that one. Just missed some big shots. And thing is, you look at the stat line, and, oh, 5 of 8, well, not too bad, 13 points. But, I mean, some of the ones he missed, as you alluded to there, and the turnovers were crushing because Marquette tried so hard just to hang with Creighton. And you just can't afford mistakes. You can't afford bad shots. And Creighton took advantage of every opportunity, took advantage of every open man. They shot 52% from three and 62% overall. And just, you know, a part of that, you just got to tip your cat and say, look, they're a great shooting team. But Marquette probably didn't have its – certainly didn't have its best defensive game. They were two – Marquette was 2 of 11 from three. You know, taking 11 three-pointers, that's actually probably fine. That's probably about where you would want Marquette to be. You would just hope they would make – six or seven,
right?
You know, that's the spot where you would have hoped Jake Thomas would have had a better game. He didn't. He was 1 of 4. He had 9 points.
You know, what was interesting was that game, that Creighton game, was kind of the polar opposite of everything we had seen the previous three games when they kind of went on their tear. You know, they had been hot from the free throw line. They were clearly not this game, where they shot 55.6% from the line. From the charity stripe. Jake Thomas was hitting in the previous games. This game, he was 1 for 4 from three.
And Jameel Wilson was 0 for 4 as well. I mean, Jameel Wilson's a guy, every time he takes a three, you're like, no, no, no. And if it goes in, you love it.
Right.
But he's a guy you love to see him drive and go to the basket.
Right. And then Todd Mayo, who the previous three games had been lights out, savior in a couple of them, had just been ruthless and efficient. In that Creighton game, he was less than efficient and less than ruthless, I would say, or maybe too ruthless. One could argue he was on a knife's edge in the previous games, where he was just the right amount of aggressive, and this game he was maybe too aggressive. But it was just an all round tough game, and I have to say that overall, you know, I thought we were going to be, you know, best friends with Creighton. After having been at that game, I have to say Creighton may be the team I hate the most in the new Big East.
I would say, yeah, the angst over Creighton on Twitter maybe surprised me a little bit. But, yeah, it seems like they are quickly becoming the most hated team. And we'll see if that sustains as years go by. But, tell us your story, Phil, of some interactions with Creighton fans, because apparently many of fans who were there did not care too much. And this maybe certainly comes off as being a sore loser, because when your team is getting smoked and the other team's cheering, of course you're going to be a little disgruntled. But I'm sure you have some stories there from the upper deck.
Well, yeah, it was – well, I mean, first of all, the Creighton fans were – I think it was kind of like Marquette's season. It was a balance of expectations. You know, I was expecting good, friendly banter, and it was generally relatively mean-spirited, any Creighton fans I kind of talked to. And then the cake topper, and we can't – and we can say this is officially not not sore losership, because it happened with like 4 minutes gone in the first half. But we sit in the upper deck, and a section over and behind was probably a group of, oh, I'd say 30 to 40 Creighton fans all in a group. The average age was whatever gets you into Old Country Buffet around 3 p.m. It was probably the youngest one there was probably 55 or 60. So sitting in a group and they're having beers, and yeah, I don't think anything of it. They're sitting section over and up, and they're behind some Marquette season ticket holders and whatnot. And next thing I know, you know, during the media timeout, I hear screaming and yelling and turn around, and there's, I don't know if he was ironically dressed or if he thought it was a good look, but there was a Marquette fan, probably early 30s, wearing a button-down shirt and a gold sweater vest and bow tie. Standing there,
stellar.
It was outstanding. Again,
that.
I don't know if it was ironic or not. Standing up, yelling at the group of Creighton fans, where there was about 10 of these older individuals, not quite the greatest generation, standing up, flipping double birds, screaming "F you this, F you that, shut up," you know, like real like stuff we might have even said when we were in college. I don't know if we want to go that far. And it just kind of just escalated, and the Marquette guy saying something about my, I've got my daughter here. Can can you keep it down? And they're, just repeatedly, telling him to F off and do things to himself that are, I don't think possible. And finally, like, somebody got one of the ushers up there, and then the next thing you know, Milwaukee police are there, and they escort out a couple of Creighton fans. And then the next thing you know, all the Creighton fans are screaming and pointing at the Marquette fan saying he started it. So the usher get the Marquette fan, and they all walk away, and everyone kind of settles in with a whole bunch of murmuring. And then, 20, 30 minutes later, the Creighton fans were back. They clearly had cooled off by having another couple of beers and were back to their old F this and F that. And everyone just kind of ignored them at that point. And because we were all busy booing the officials. And it was just bizarre. And all the fans, I didn't run into any of them that really had anything nice to say, and Creighton just flops. It was just a bizarre. I went from, "Hey, Creighton, glad you're here," to, "Get out now."
College sports fanship at its finest.
Yeah, I.
At least nobody like got drunk and like did a, belly flop on top of somebody like that Alabama mom that went viral. That was hysterical. But maybe it would have come to that if we had, played the game a little closer and had it a little more heated. But that's tremendous. That's just great
Yeah,
that
it was fantastic.
Jesuits, fan of Jesuit schools, can just interact like that and curse at each other and, make crude suggestions of what to do to themselves. That's great to hear.
Yeah,
Thanks, Creighton.
yeah, it
Great to
was.
have you.
We were keeping it classy up in the BC. It was. I can only imagine what the lower bowl was like. But and I have
Oh,
to say, the
gosh.
officiating was so off-putting that that was the loudest I had ever heard the Bradley Center, which was both positive and negative. It was positive because everybody, the people who bothered to show up, were into the game. But it was also negative because it took, some pretty poor reffing to really wake up the crowd this season. So.
Yeah, and when you're playing a game close and it's and there's a foul you don't like, it just amps up your frustration that much more. Ask Jim Boeheim. But
Yeah, how he. We should have asked him how we should have handled that scenario.
yeah. The thing I love about the Jim Boeheim thing is people saying, "Well, it's okay. It was a terrible call. Of course he blows up." But you got to keep your cool in that situation, don't you? I
Well,
mean,
hey, listen, way to be the adult and go, "Hey, we still got a shot here." It's.
yeah. And then get two tees, and then no, you don't have a shot. But we're
Right.
getting off topic.
Yes,
But yeah, the
exactly.
officiating was unfortunate, although, to be fair, personal fouls in the game, Creighton 30, Marquette 22.
Right. Well, and I, to tell you the truth, I thought the officiating was horrible, but I thought it was horrible both ways. First of all, they changed what they were calling from the first half to the second half. I will say they were somewhat relatively consistent. The big difference was Marquette was, as we used to see in the old Big East, Marquette was always kind of the aggressor, the physical team. And when you get a tight game called, that's going to affect Marquette more than it is the other team, especially
Yeah, if you're
Creighton.
jump shooting teams don't get fouls.
Right, exactly. And Creighton is such a soft, and they are just Euro floppers. It was like I was watching an English Premier League soccer game. It was pretty bad. But the most frustrating thing was simply the fact that I think at one point we were getting fouls called every 15 seconds, and it just took both teams out of the. It was just such a choppy game. It was not even enjoyable to watch.
See, I think, yeah, being rivals of Wisconsin, of course, I think we are wired to hate teams that hit a lot of jumpers, seem to not get many fouls called their way, and flop. And so that Creighton just kind of
We're
molded in right
pre-triggered.
into that. Yeah, they're like Jesuit Wisconsin.
Yeah,
Although
I
I guess
think that's.
technically Marquette should be Jesuit Wisconsin, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I think you're 127% correct.
27%, eh?
Well, it's extra accuracy.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah,
But
you're welcome.
regardless, the game was unfortunate. Marquette lost. Opportunity missed again. If you want to blame the officials, you can. If you want
Yeah,
to blame Marquette.
I don't blame the officials. Marquette
But
was in
bottom line
it.
is, Marquette lost. It was another opportunity missed to get a good win heading in to Big East tournament and then NCAA tournament. So tournament hopes were certainly soured on that night. And then we turned the page to Saturday, and boy, the wheels almost came off in Chicago.
Oh, hey, guess what? Guess what? I am once again really good at predicting the exact opposite of what I say is going to happen. Because I on Twitter, if you're following me on Twitter, which a couple of you do, I predicted a big double-digit win. I thought there was no way Marquette was going to go in, even though we've talked about it repeatedly. The All-State is both literally and figuratively a house of horrors. I thought there was no way without Cleveland Melvin that that DePaul would be competitive with Marquette, especially given I thought from the Creighton game that Marquette showed a lot of heart and just didn't have the firepower to keep up with Creighton. Boy, was I off.
Yeah, I confess because I had to go to a bar to watch this game because normally I'll go to the Marquette watch parties with a bunch of Marquette fans over in Dallas, but I didn't feel like going all the way to Dallas to watch Marquette DePaul. So I stayed at a place closer to my house and met there with a friend of mine. And so we're the only two people in our entire place watching the Marquette DePaul game. So as I'm eating my wings and drinking my beer, I keep looking up. I'm like, gosh, DePaul is still in this thing. How is Marquette not pulling away from these guys?
Yeah, well, and it was tougher for me because it was the one game. It was on, CBS Sportsnet, and I don't get that.
Yeah, that's why I didn't watch it at home. I didn't get CBS Sportsnet either.
Right, and so, I in full disclosure, I'm even less prepared than normal for these podcasts because I wasn't able to watch the game but the last 2 minutes of regulation in the overtime, and I listened to Steve the Homer True and Jim McElvain on the radio broadcast, which is always pleasant for me. But I don't have the visual aspect, but the entire game listening on the radio kept going, oh my God, what is going on? Even when we got the 15-point lead, I didn't feel like we had really turned a corner. I just felt like DePaul didn't play well.
Yeah. According to the stats, DePaul shot 48% from three. It sure seemed like about 90% to me because they just kept hitting big shots and getting back in it. And all of a sudden they tie the game. Marquette just had no answer for Garrett or Young. And I don't know. It was a bad game. But the thing is Marquette still got out of there with a win. And one thing I want to say about the game is Marquette has that game every year.
Yes.
And it's almost always at DePaul, but sometimes it's somewhere else, whether it's
East Carolina.
East Carolina or South Florida or something like that. They always have that game on the road every year that they underperform. And when Marquette is a tournament team, as they have been the past 8 years, we really just kind of blow it off. Say, okay, well, that's Marquette's stink game. They just didn't play well. They get out of it with a win. Who cares? On to the next one. But because Marquette is a bubble team, to be generous.
Yeah, put that in quotes.
Yeah, to be generous, Marquette is a bubble team this year. The game is so much more disappointing because instead of being a fluke, it's more like this is a confirmation of what we have feared, that Marquette is not a very good team. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
In the past, it's an aberration. It's okay, that's our bad game. That's our bad game. We got away with it with a win. It's fine. Move on. Not a big deal. We're still going to the tournament. This year, it's more like, well, confirmation. We stink. So I think that's why people kind of overreacted to it. But really, I'm sure Buzz is just telling his guys what he would say in a tournament year. That was our bad game, and we got away with it with a win. No big deal. All right, we survived. We played poorly, defensively especially. Let's just get out of there with a win and be happy with it.
Well right. It's kind of the axiom, the pilot's axiom. Any landing you can walk away from is a good one, regardless of whether you've got the wings scattered all over the runway and it looks like the plane from Die Hard 2. So, yeah, a win is a win, but it looked to be an epic meltdown. And the one thing I got a question, I'll admit I've given Buzz a relative pass this season. The one thing, like you mentioned, their guards continuing to hit threes. I got to wonder what we're continuing, especially on these perimeter-oriented teams, we're continuing to switch on everything. And I'm wondering if the switching on everything is really starting to hamper what is traditionally a relatively porous three-point defense anyway for Marquette. Mm-hmm. I think they're really concerned about the pick and rolls and the interior defense and the perimeter team setting screens and rolling to the hoop and getting buckets. But I have to say, if they keep hitting all these threes that they've been hitting, we should probably let them drive to the hoop. It'd certainly be worth less points.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know. I'll confess, I'm not very good at analyzing defense. I'm really not. I say, if the other team's scoring, well, that's terrible defense. But it did seem that DePaul had a lot of open threes. And
I mean, they shot 29 threes in the game and made 14 of them.
Right. I mean, you give them that many opportunities, they're going to sink enough of them.
Right. Right. Just to keep it in. It was just a crazy game and back and forth. And the free throws, again, kind of sort of came up. I mean, we shot below where we were the previous game, especially in overtime. That was nearly killed me. Especially Devontae. We need to officially stop the automatic thing. I mean, if he's not going to hit.
I think we're done.
If he's not going to hit clutch free throws, it's done. Be done with it.
Yeah. Maybe automatic has jumped the shark.
Yeah, I think so.
But I will take one positive I'll definitely take out of this game is Chris Otule's performance in the second half. I think he had 10 points in the second half of that game. The box score only shows 4 rebounds, but he was really working hard down there, and he gave Marquette some points when they really needed it to make sure they didn't lose that game in regulation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was – and again, this was another game where the officiating was really – Not bad necessarily in terms of favoring teams, but they were calling a lot of fouls and in both directions. And I can't really say, again, I was listening on the radio, I can't really say whether they were good calls or bad calls, but the amount of fouls that were being called, and with DePaul's lack of depth on the interior, Otule had to set up. It was either going to be him or Devontae Gardner. And Otule really stepped up, got some points, really altered some shots when they did come inside. It was a strong play from Devontae or from Otule, and it's good to see, you know, that we can have players like that step up from time to time. We don't have to rely on Devontae all the time because, you know, he can be inconsistent at times.
Yeah, but overall, you get 34 points from your centers. That's pretty solid. And Devontae getting to the free throw line is, as we've always said, is Marquette's safest way to get points. You know, maybe the automatic thing has jumped the shark a little bit, but he's still a good free throw shooter. He's as long as he's getting to the line, getting those 3-point plays, and that was really what kind of helped Marquette kind of grind out that win. But there were two plays in the game that I just want to talk about because they were both borderline hilarious.
Hilarious or depressing if they go the
hilarious,
other way.
Hilarious. I'm gonna say hilarious because I'm just gonna laugh it off.
Okay, you know? that's the only way.
But they call it troubling or whatever you want to say, but they're just fun to talk about to me. Number one, at the end of regulation, after DePaul tied the game with a 3, of course, Marquette inbounded the ball. Buzz called the timeout, which was fine, really. But, you know, Derek Wilson did not know he had called the timeout, so there were 2 seconds left, so he chucked it. And, this guy, who, of course, never shoots, the guy is as broke as he can be from beyond 10 feet, doesn't even try jump shots.
Can't hit water if he fell out of a boat.
But he buries an 80-footer that would have won the game. And I told you earlier, my friend Brian and I, we were in this bar, and we're the only two people watching the Marquette game, and we didn't know there was a timeout call, but we see the shot go in, and we just erupt, like, oh, my gosh! Then, like, I look, and I see there's still time on the clock, and everyone in the bar looks at us like, what channel are you watching? Like, everyone is looking at us. We're like, we're sorry. Did you see that shot?
Yeah.
This guy who never makes anything just hit a shot from 80 feet. Well, and it was just – that would have been the most hilarious way to beat DePaul.
Yeah, that
if Derek Wilson hit an 80-footer to win the game.
That would have been – that would have out-DePaul'd DePaul'd.
Yes. I mean, that would be the game that we would talk about. We would, like, just, like, retweet it, just post it every year when we played DePaul. Like, remember when.
Well, it was weird. I even had it with the sound on. I was when I got to where my destination for my party that afternoon, the sound was on, and I was watching with a whole bunch of people, and everyone just kind of went, "What?" And I was like, I didn't realize a timeout had been called, but I was screaming, "There's players on the court! There's too many players on the court!" It was just bizarre. And I heard even that Around the Horn went and had a conversational segment about whether it was appropriate to call timeout there or not, which is insane.
Yeah. Oh, of course. I mean, of course Buzz is right to call the timeout.
Yeah,
you know, the only reason you question it is because Derek Wilson made a shot.
Right,
of course,
exactly.
Of course you call the timeout. Because if Buzz Williams doesn't call that timeout and they don't make it, everyone says, what? Can't take that time. Like, what are you going to do with that timeout, Buzz? You can't take it to the locker room with you.
Right.
So,
well,
of course you use the timeout.
Yeah, because nobody in their right mind, even after a timeout, would draw up the plane. Okay, this is going to inbound to Derek, and he's going to chuck it 80 feet.
Exactly.
Like, it's just bizarre. It was a bizarre play, and it was weird. And it seemed to take an abnormal amount of time for people to get oriented to what was actually going on. But be that as it may, it
Derek,
did
you
not
know, if
count.
You got that kind of range, buddy, take a few jumpers.
Right.
That range from that far.
Right.
Come
go
on,
ahead.
You got to be able to make a three every now and then.
I would like to know, you know, last point on this. I would legitimate point. When was the last time Derek attempted a three? Do we even know?
I can't remember when. I'm sure he's done it this year.
He's one for 13 on the season. I know that, but I can't remember when the last 13.
I think if I recall correctly, it was one of the games that was a really bad one. I want to say maybe the St. John's game that he tried a three at the buzzer just for grins, and it rimmed out.
Okay.
There was definitely a shot. There was definitely a game that Marquette absolutely lost that he tried a three and missed. But that's the only one I remember this year. But you know, be that as it may, Derek's not a shooter. I just found it hilarious that he nailed that shot that will never count.
Right.
The other play that I want to talk about would be if it had gone just a little bit worse, we would be bemoaning it, right? It would probably have led the podcast. Because, of course, at the end of the game, when Marquette up four and then DePaul got a layup to get within two, Marquette inbounds the ball to Devontae Gardner, the team's best free throw shooter, who catches it with about, I don't know, 7 or 6 seconds left, decides to throw it in the air. Ball comes down around midcourt, and DePaul catches it with 2 seconds and gets a three off that would have won the game.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it fell short.
Well, and he took about 4 steps on his way. But be that as it may,
yes,
Devontae, you're a big man. You can chuck it deeper, chuck it higher. I don't
hold on to it and take your free throws.
Well, you know what? This is – I'm not going to – believe you me, I'm a big Devontae Gardner fan. I love him.
As am I, but I'm not giving him a pass on that play.
I am not either, and I will say this is yet more evidence in a series of late-game decision-making, because there have been instances where the big man, who's got, admittedly, for someone who's 6'8", you know, 290 pounds, has a serviceable handle. I think in one game I saw him dribble behind his back, going down the court while the other team was trying to foul him. And then I think earlier in that DePaul game, he also dribbled to split a double team and then short-armed a pass to Derek. It's one of those, you know, you're kind of watching somebody walking a tightrope and you think they know what they're doing, but you're not totally sure it's going to work out.
Save that for the summer league.
Yeah, it was...
You know, like I said, I love Devontae. He's one of the best players on the team, most productive, most consistent offensive players. But that play, if that had gone wrong, boy, I would not want to be Devontae at practice on Monday.
Oh, and
I still probably wouldn't want to be Devontae at practice on Monday, because I'm sure Buzz still let him have it.
Well, I would hope so. And that would have, just like the Derek 3 going in was us DePauling DePaul,
yeah.
That would have been DePaul DePauling us.
That DePaul would have held that over us forever.
Right. And
forever.
Rightfully so. That would have been, I mean, first of all, that would have been Fox Sports 1.
That would have been the one. Oh, yeah.
The one.
That would have been on ESPN's Not Top Plays for
right.
2 months.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and they don't like the Big East anymore anyway, so they would have probably put it on there until we screwed up something else later next season. But, yeah, it was, oh, man. That whole game, it epitomizes the whole game where you're just, like, on razor's edge and you're just sitting there going, why? Why are we doing this? Why is this happening?
I wish I had gotten a screen. If I was watching my house, I would have gotten a screen capture of it. But there was – before one of Devontae's missed free throws, Buzz was just sitting there. Like, he just had this look on his face like, I hate this game and I hate this arena and I just hate everything right now. He just had this look on his face. Like I said, I wish I had had a screen capture of it. But I'm like, that is the whole season.
Right.
Like in a freeze frame right there, that look on Buzz's
face.
Well,
that's kind of like the avatar I have of Devontae Gardner's mom from the St. John's game, just going,
yes.
Oh, which,
yes.
Which I'm not taking down until Marquette makes the playoff or makes the tournament. So it looks like I'm not taking it down.
So you're not taking it down till next March?
Correct. Correct. That's what it appears to be at this point.
Oh, mercy. Well, now that we've gotten over that, like I said, we can laugh about the Ox thing because they won and they got away with it. But please, Devontae, next time, just take free throws, buddy.
Yeah.
It would be easier on my heart and all of Marquette Nation. But, hey, got away with it. Laugh it off. Move on. Now let's talk about moving on. You talked about the tournament and maybe whether or not you will change your avatar on Twitter or not. People are still talking about the bubble. And, you know, we officially closed the door on the bubble after the St. John's loss. But I think it is – we should speak to what I'm calling the Lloyd Christmas crowd. So you're telling me there's a chance.
What was all because that one in a million talk?
because there actually is a chance, as mediocre as Marquette has been, as disappointing as the season has been, it is not impossible that Marquette could make the tournament. Yes, Marquette essentially has to win out and maybe win, I don't know, 5 out of 6 or something as they go into the Big East tournament. But there are opportunities ahead of Marquette. I mean, as we sit here today, you know, for those of you who are fans of Joe Lunardi on ESPN, he had Marquette as what he's calling 4 more. He has, you know, last 4 out, next 4 out, and then he threw in 4 more. He threw Marquette in that mix.
Has he created a 4? There's no way in heck they get in group yet?
I think that should be the next one. I think 4 who should be making an IT plan should be the next one after that.
Right. I mean, he's got enough groups.
But anyway, that being said, you know, yes, being 10 or 11 back, you know, on the waiting list to get into the tournament is pretty far back there. But a few good wins, it is not inconceivable that they could get up that high and get into the tournament. And maybe, you know, the committee makes mistakes every Selection Sunday. Maybe
we could be that mistake.
We could be that mistake. That's a new slogan for the season.
Yeah.
Be that mistake.
Yes. Yes.
Marquette basketball.
You want to be the guy that shows up at the right time at bar close with the pretty girl that's had a little too much to drink and broke up recently.
Yes.
Not that ever happened to us.
No, certainly not. But even if they make that mistake, it still happened to you, and you take advantage of it.
Right.
So Marquette, be that mistake. Get close enough to be the mistake that the selection committee makes. They have 4 games left, of course, and they are all against teams that are either on the bubble or locks for the tournament. Georgetown, bubble team, currently projected out by Joe Lunardi.
They're probably as far out off the bubble as we are.
I like to call Georgetown our brothers in mediocrity.
Yes.
Then there's at Villanova, which is that is a resume builder if you can get that one. I thought it's a reach, but it's still on there, and it will start 0-0 like every game else. Every other game will. At Providence, bubble team, currently projected in. St. John's at home, red hot team, currently projected in. Let's think optimistically. excuse me, I'm choking up here.
Yeah, you're getting emotional. It's not that big a deal.
I need to have a drink. excuse me. Okay, I think I'm better.
Okay, good.
Sorry.
We should get whatever you just drank to sponsor the podcast now.
Well, it's Miller Lite, actually.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go.
that being said, I'm getting all emotional talking about the bubble. So there's certainly opportunities left, Phil, that there are teams ahead of Marquette that are projected ahead of them in line, or the waiting list, as I like to call it, for the tournament. Win those games. Again, let's be optimistic and say Marquette wins all of them. How far back could Marquette be?
If Marquette wins all of them, I think they're in because the Nova gives them the resume builder. Plus, they will have beat, I think Lunardi has, St. John's and Providence both in their last 4 in, and Georgetown is one of the last 4 out. So having beat all of those, you would have to argue they'd be ahead of them. Plus, I think from the way if they won out, Marquette would finish third in the for sure would finish third.
Yeah, if Marquette won out, they'd definitely finish third. Now, Marquette could finish anywhere between third and seventh, and seventh is the danger zone. That
right.
is disaster area. If Marquette, say, loses all 4, then that means they would have to play on Wednesday. Then you got to win 4 games in 4 days. That's not happening. Not even a really good team, I don't think, could do that.
Right. Well, I think there's an argument to be made for Marquette being closer to the bubble than not. I don't mm-hmm. happen to believe in that argument, or I guess I see the argument's point, but I don't think Marquette's as close as the argument would make. There's a couple of things. One, the Big East from an RPI perspective and from a conference perspective, I think is the number 3rd conference, maybe the number 4th conference.
Higher than I would think.
Higher than you would think. And if, let's say Marquette gets to 3rd or 4th in the conference, you're telling me the 3rd best conference in the country sends only 2 teams to the tournament?
Well, that's kind of the problem. That's where the thing gets tricky, because obviously teams like Xavier and St. John's and Georgetown even, and they have better non-conference.
That's correct.
I mean, Marquette has got nothing.
Right.
Conference. Well, George Washington, that's all Marquette's got out of conference.
Right. Now,
that's their only top 50 win right now.
That's correct. That's 100% correct, top 50 non-conference. But if you look at all the RPIs in total, And I think Mike Broeker sent this out, which you got to take that with a grain of salt, because Mike's
Mike's being a cheerleader, and he should be
right, absolutely, and I don't begrudge him, but he does have the bubble team W's versus the RPI 26 through 150, excluding guarantee games. Is Xavier has 11, Marquette has 9, Providence has 9, Georgetown has 8, and St. John's have 7, and then presumably if you win 3 out of 4, Marquette's, you know, top 150 games go up to 12. So again, there's arguments to be made. I don't believe them, but there are arguments to be made.
Yeah, they're certainly in the mix. And the big problem, of course, that I have with talking about Marquette making the tournament is what you're asking is for this team that has been flawed and inconsistent to be consistently flawless for 5 or 6 games.
Right. Well, and even if you concede the Nova game and you say, okay, they're going to lose against Villanova, which I don't think a lock. I mean, we're playing Villanova on a Sunday at the big their big venue, the Verizon or the Wachovia Center. Mm-hmm. We're not playing on campus, which the on campus stadium scares me a heck of a lot more than the off campus. Having said that, if you concede Nova's a locked loss, then we've got to go 3 for 3 for sure. We have to beat Georgetown, Providence, and St. John's. What about this team has ever said, and we've been saying it for a month now, what about this team says they're consistent enough to go on the, you know, to play 2 good teams at home and a solid team on the road and come away with victories?
Exactly. And then, you know, let's say, like, the cautiously optimistic folk, the ridiculously optimistic folks are saying win them all and then win 2 games in the tournament and you're in. The cautiously optimistic are saying let's win 3 out of 4, lose to Villanova. Let's say that happens. Then you still got to get some wins in the Big East tournament, because then in that first game, you're going to be playing either Georgetown or Providence or St. John's or Xavier. So you can't lose that one.
Right.
So you're going to have to win. You're going to have to beat one of those 4 teams again. And then in the next round, you're probably going to be playing Creighton or Villanova.
Right. So you've already said, as you said, we've got to go 4 out of 5, you know, in the last games here for sure. Theoretically, 4 out of 6. And now, again, the other part of it is that the bubble's really soft. There's some really bad mediocre teams, but mm-hmm. but Marquette is still, even with all those bad mediocre teams, I think Marquette's on the backside of those teams, so they've got to do work to get there. And I just don't think, and it sounds like you agree, they don't have the ability right now. They haven't shown an ability to do the work to get on the plus side of that mediocrity.
Right. Bottom line, you're asking this team to just get hot, like right now.
Right.
Like starting Thursday against Georgetown, they've got to get hot right now and just start tearing it up. And I just think that's asking a lot. I think the most likely scenario for Marquette to get into the NCAA tournament is to just be really hot for 3 days in March and win 3 games in New York. Maybe you get lucky and somebody knocks off Creighton for you, and then you can slip past them and maybe catch Villanova off guard, and then you get in that way. I think that is honestly much more likely than Marquette winning 5 out of 6 games and getting an at-large bid.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is certainly much more likely that we're going to get hot in the tournament. Maybe it's poor being a poor fan, but I think we are we're definitely not going to make it this year. I'd love to see it, but I don't think it's being a poor fan.
I think it's you know, it's good to be optimistic. I just prefer mine with a side of realism. And just not to look at it and just say, we're definitely going to win them all. We can definitely win them all. And just, you know, just being a little more realistic. Look at the whole body of work. Look at the team. What have they shown in the last 2 months that makes you say they're going to win 5 out of 6 games? I'd love for them to prove me wrong. I'd love for them to stand up and hold up a trophy, like a Big East tournament championship trophy, or to, you know, be that team that gets its name called on Selection Sunday and jumps up and down and say, yeah, we got in. I'd love for that to happen. I just don't see it.
Yep, I agree.
Yep. All right, well, quickly, let's just talk about the next 2 games real quick before we wrap up this podcast. Georgetown and then Villanova. You know, Georgetown, as I called them earlier, are brothers in mediocrity. This is a team that they've had their frustrating losses. And they had that huge win over Michigan State in non-conference, even though Michigan State's a little beat up. Still a big win for them, but they've had some nice wins in conference as well. But they've had those 2 just terrible losses to Seton Hall. Those 2 are really holding the Hoyas back right now. And this game might have a little bit of a little bit of a play-in game feel to it, because I think the team that loses this game is really behind the eight ball heading into the last three.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. This is basically the loser leaves town game. To go old school wrestling reference for you, I knew you would enjoy that.
Enjoyed it very much.
So, you know, it's going to be loser leaves town. I think this is not the game I'm concerned about as much as a couple of others when we're talking about needing to win three out of the four. I think Georgetown with the zone, surprisingly, I think we'll be able to attack the zone relatively well. You know, who knows, maybe we'll see a repeat of John Dawson's performance previously.
Be nice, but I'm not counting on
it. I'm not counting on it either. I think we kind of caught lightning in a bottle there. I think Marquette will be up to the challenge. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, certainly. I'm hoping the DePaul game is a bit of a wake-up. I think they win, but I think it's going to be tough sledding, and it's all going to depend on whether Georgetown is shooting well or not. I mean, they shot relatively well the first game. If Marquette's three-point defense continues to struggle, this certainly could go down as a loss.
Yeah, I'm really counting on a big game from Todd Mayo, because he hit the three in that game that sent it to overtime. Because I'm not expecting John Dawson to have that outlier performance again. So I think some guard play's got to come around. I'm counting on it in the form of Todd Mayo. And as always, go inside to the big guys. Hopefully Gardner has another strong game inside.
Right. Right. Well, and that's the other funny thing. You mentioned the Todd Mayo shot. If that shot doesn't go in, we've lost to Georgetown, and we're not even close to the bubble. So, you know, this team is definitely on a razor's edge.
Probably our second best win, to be honest, because it was a team in the RPI top 60-ish, and it was on the road. So that's probably our second best win as we sit here and record this podcast. Yep. And, of course, the game after that is going to be a Sunday game. It's going to be at Nova. We kind of touched on it briefly as we were breaking down Marquette's tournament chances. Certainly not a game I expect Marquette to win. Nova's significantly better, but oh man, what if we catch Nova sleeping? Then things get really exciting. But I'm just not counting on it. Nova's just so darn good.
No, I don't. I don't think there's. Excuse me. I might need some of your Miller Lite.
It'll be a long delivery to get it to Milwaukee.
Yeah, I think we can find some up here.
You got some?
Okay, yeah, cool. Perhaps. I know a guy. Yeah, the Nova game, and again, the season has finally beat me into the pessimistic streak. I don't think there's, you know, after watching Marquette need miracle after miracle to get to overtime with Villanova, I don't think there is any way that Marquette can win at Nova. I think I would put it solidly a lock. I don't think there's any way Marquette's going to win. I obviously hope to be wrong, and maybe I'm pulling a reverse jinx. Who knows? But I don't think they can. I think they can beat Georgetown, but the Nova game, I think Nova's going to be too set on, you know, Nova's plating for seeding at this point, and you know, it's an away game, and I'm really concerned. We're not there yet, but I'm really concerned about that Providence game because that's such a quick turnaround, and if we have the letdown off the Nova, that Providence game is the one I'm really worried about because that's the must-have.
Yeah, I think most realistic scenario next time we convene for a podcast, Marquette has gone 1-1 here with Georgetown and Nova, and then are heading into its last two games saying, all right, we got to win two. We got to win both these games, then we'll talk about the Big East tournament. So we'll see if that's where things lie next time we have a podcast.
Right. Well, and it's an interesting schedule quirk. One just last thing, and I think you and I talked about it offline previously. So we've got Villanova at Villanova, and then we've got Providence at Providence less than – well, right around, you know, 36, 40 hours later, does Marquette stay out there?
I would hope so, because that's the, you know, because it's not like they're going to come back and go to class on that Monday, because they'd just be getting up Monday morning and leaving, wouldn't they?
Right.
I mean, because to me, the thing is, I don't know, the NCAA has some dumb rules that might not even let them do it, but to me, it would make all the sense in the world for them to stay in Philadelphia that night and then head to Providence the next day. But whatever, I don't know what the NCAA allows. Not that anyone's crying any tears for them flying private jets, but still traveling is a beating, and the less you can do, the better.
Right. And you know, you want to give yourself every opportunity to win, but that turnaround, whether they stay out there or not, that turnaround's tough. So
yeah,
here's to hoping we get at least one so we can worry about whether Tuesday's important or not. Because if they lose both games, and, you know, if they lose both Georgetown and Villanova, Providence really doesn't matter at that point.
Yeah. So hopefully they do get that one win. Before we wrap up the podcast, a couple business items I do want to remind people of. If you follow Fox Sports Hoops on Twitter, you know Jamil Wilson and Juan Anderson are going to do a Google Hangout Sounds like one of those cool things that the kids do these days, Phil.
Oh,
they're gonna do that on Tuesday. So if you download this podcast very early, it'll be Tuesday at 2 o'clock Central Time. If you download it after that, well, you've missed it.
Time travel. Get Marty McFly on it.
But yeah, you know, if you want to ask Jamil and Juan Anderson some questions, they will be available on a Google Hangout. Keep an eye, follow Fox Sports Hoops on Twitter for more details on that. And one more thing, just doing this for the university, Phil, being a team guy. Battle of the Beaks is going on. If you want to make a donation to Marquette, we're going to, because things haven't gone so well against Creighton and St. John's on the court, maybe we can beat them with our wallets and win this Battle of the Beaks nice. Donation campaign they have going on. By the way, was it news to you also that St. John's has a bird as a mascot?
Yes, it was. I was completely unaware of this.
Yeah, so... By the way, St. John's and Creighton, aren't those really those three games, Marquette's three worst losses of the year?
Yes. Yes, by far.
So, you know, we owe them some payback, and until we can do it on the court, might as well just try to beat them with our wallet. So, well, Battle of the Beaks.
Yeah, Battle of the Beaks. Well, what kind of bird is St. John's?
So, well, I mean, it's the Red Storm, but, I mean, in the little logo, I mean, it's like a bird that's looking right at you, and it's kind of creepy. I don't know. I guess they just have like a mascot kind of like St. Joe's does that flaps its wings. I don't know. I didn't know St. John's had a bird as its like actual mascot that's in the arena, but apparently it does, or else it wouldn't even be in Battle of the Beaks.
Apparently they're a little less promotional about their bird than Marquette is.
But whatever.
Yeah.
Battle of the Beaks. Give to Marquette. Help out the kids. Again, you can always follow us on Twitter. Crack Sidewalks would be the team page. Individually, I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF 23. That's three O's for those counting at home. You can like us on Facebook and also download the podcast on iTunes. Any final thoughts, Phil?
Nope. We just need some consistent performance, which I don't necessarily anticipate, but hey, let's hope for it.
All right. Until next time, everyone, seashells and balloons, be that mistake.
Ha!